Jesus, I think, was the one who was supposedly said, if you bring forth what is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you will destroy you. And what we're doing is we're destroying ourselves because we're sleeping. We're not digesting. We're not actually waking. We're not processing. And so this dissonance is cajoling us, and we're starting to allow ourselves to move through a process which is going to allow us to bring forth what is truly within us, which is this deep sense of connectedness with life. And so every time we shift in our phase change, we also shift to a new stage of meaning making, a new way of organizing. And what regenerative leadership is essentially is a new way of running our organizations, our businesses and our ventures.
Welcome to Green Planet, Blue Planet. I'm here today with Giles Hutchins. Welcome, Giles.
Lovely to be here with you, Julian.
Yeah, you know, you've been in this line of work for the last 25 years or more, you know, organizational change, the kind of evolutionary step into transformational leadership and regeneration, really. You have a podcast yourself called Leading by Nature, and your latest book is also called Leading by Nature. And I'm just really excited for your viewpoints and the way you've woven this kind of change into the world, because it's becoming more and more mainstream now. But I can imagine that it felt more like trailblazing for you when you started doing this kind of work.
Yes, being when you're on the edge to start off with, it can be a bit of a bleeding edge, quite painful. When you get lots of people challenging and questioning what you're about. But something is definitely shifting in the gestalt, and it's become regenerative has become quite a thing, as you know.
Yeah, and hopefully it's going to be more than just another buzzword like sustainability. But I think there's like a deeply satisfying sound to regeneration. To me, it seems like it's a principle of nature. How do you define regeneration, or how do you bring that to groups of people that are kind of new to it?
Well, fundamentally, regeneration is about working the way life works. So it's a recognition that we've fallen out of sync with life, and we're just allowing ourselves to remember that inherent grammar innate within nature. Now, there's a lot more to it, but that's the simple. Perhaps the slightly deeper response would be that we can learn from living systems at three levels. The first level being really understanding nature's patterns, principles, and processes. And there's a whole set of schools out there like biomimicry, circular economics, systems thinking, and so forth that help us work with the principles and processes we find within life. And then there's the second level, which is a systemic participation, actually working within living systems. So it's a recognition that we're actually in it. So that first level is like an open mind. And the second level is like an open heart. It's an embodied experience. And that way we start to work with the systemic dynamics within the organization as a living system and immersed within life. And then that third level is actually what I call open will, which is an existential shift, which is tuning into nature's wisdom, a recognition that actually there's much more to life than meets the eye. And that as well as just biologically understanding life, we can have a bio-psycho-spiritual receptivity and opening into life, which allows us to work with the inherent wisdom innate within life. So that's around body-mind coherence, nature immersions, threshold crossings, and so forth. So all of those three levels together work to create an embodied regenerative leadership consciousness.
Open mind, open heart, open will. It's interesting that will has to do with the way we connect to nature. Is that in the sense, would you describe it that, our human will can be quite powerful, but maybe even overpowering from the ego's perspective? And so the open will is really when we understand that there's bigger intelligence at play than just our personal mind.
Yes, and that's why the open mind comes first, and then the open heart, and then that opens us, makes us more receptive to be able to recognize that our ego can permeate, can open into a deeper sense of self. So it's a shift from self as separate from and in competition with the world into self as participating within the world. So we actually start to our ego maturation, but also permeation. So we start to allow in more of life, more of reality. And actually, we start to recognize that our brains are not just producing consciousness, that actually they are at best transducers. And we are ourselves not perceiving reality. Reality is perceiving itself through us. And then we start to shift and recognize that we're innate within something and we are conduits serving life.
So well said. And I definitely want to loop back into that, you know, the reality perceiving itself through us and kind of the responsibility that comes with it. But just for a second here, you know, you're the chairman of Future Fit Leadership Academy. You're also founder of Leadership Immersions. I said you have a new book, right? You have a podcast. You've been working for, you know, 25 years plus with founders, with CEOs in this space. Can you maybe explain to people that are tuned in today, like, the difference between talking about these things today and the receptivity people have towards open mind, heart, and will compared to, you know, I guess 25 years ago, we're even talking about a reality where the internet wasn't as broadly known as now. Right? Like, I can just imagine that back then this was like people might have shaken their heads at you, right? And now it's like people are eating it maybe out of an open hand.
Yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done. I'd still see that there's only a small fragment that are really getting it now in a truly embodied way. However, there's definitely a lot more interest. So just even 10 years ago, significantly less. 20 years ago, you know, exponentially less. So for me, my fuel or insight came from recognizing it as an early age that our sense of disconnection from life, from nature, was creating all sorts of problems. And these problems manifested in capitalism, consumerism, individualism, whatever you wish to call it. And that actually trying to... Sorry?
One of the isms, yeah.
One of the isms, many of the isms. Anthropocentrism. And then we started to recognize that actually that I felt when I was deeply connected to life, that actually a lot of these challenges dissipate or we see them differently. And so without that deep sense of connection, I felt that a lot of the challenges we were trying to solve today run the risk of being solved with the very level of consciousness that created them. So I vowed to go into business back 25 years ago to try and help solve this. What I found along the way was actually lots of very bright minds involved in business that aren't inherently trying to do anything wrong. They're all probably just trying to do what they feel is right in some way, and yet caught up in a kind of a system which is not aware of its interconnectedness. So it's actually asleep is probably the best way to put it. And so this waking up process, I think, has been going on for some time. 100 years ago, even, seeds were being sown by people like Einstein, Bateson, Donalello Meadows, Fritjof Capra, more recently. You know, a lot of this shift from mechanistic materialism to quantum complexity has been going on for a century. Hand in hand with that, though, we've been having heightened sense of separateness, heightened sleep, if you like, you know, getting more and more caught up in a technosphere, more and more caught up in the achiever mindset. And so these sort of two paths have been running next to each other, where some people are starting to become aware more of the interconnectedness of life, which is an ancient knowing, and are folding it into modern science and modern understanding of organization development and so forth. And yet there's a heightened sense of separateness. And I think we're getting to a point now where we're starting to see the illusion for what it is. It's starting to crack, as it were. And that's helping us wake up.
Again, like, really well put. I'm curious. I'm going to loop back now with what you said about, you know, reality perceiving itself through us as agents of, you know, creation or reality. And I think, you know, I can get down with that wording. And so for me, it's really about, like, what are the responsibilities that we then carry? And you said it earlier, so that we move from, you know, maybe intellectually understanding these topics into embodying them as humans, right? In line with the ecosystem at large, but also aware and responsible with the tools we create, specifically pointing at AI here, you know, because the debate is often like, it's going to get out of hand, but yet we're the creators of that tool, right? So I'm just really curious how you see, you know, the kind of the future fit. The way that we can future fit ourselves as leaders and ourselves in organizations for and again, ever-changing world from a digital perspective, and then also the implications on the more physical, kind of the more human, the human level.
Yeah. And whatever we do, and this is the beautiful thing about our minds, whatever we do, we've got to reconnect first. We've got to open first into life. That's the first step in anything, which is a surrendering, a not knowing, which of course is not always easy when we get busy. So before we even tackle or approach AI, let's start with ourselves. And ourselves are full of dynamic tensions, interweaving. You could call it the symbol of yin-yang. So for instance, just in the mind, you've got the dorsal and ventral systems, you know, the dorsal being more focused and attuned and narrowing down, the ventral being more expansive. You've got the left brain hemisphere, again, more mechanistic and abstracting. You've got the right brain hemisphere, which is more holistic. You've got the top forehead, the insular region, and then the back parietal region, again, different forms of attention. And then you've got the sympathetic and parasympathetic networks. Sympathetic is more fight-flight, more reaction. Parasympathetic, more open, digesting, renewing. And you've got then the biorhythms and hormones, cortisol, adrenaline, serotonin, oxytocin. All these tensions you can see are going on all the time. And the ancient symbol of the snake interweaving is what's going on. So that's what we've got going on inside our own body mind. Now, with that knowledge, if we then attend to something like AI, we've got to recognize that there is a tendency in us at the moment, because we've got ungrounded, to actually get more caught up in one of those snakes, which is the more focused one, the more attending one, the more reactive one, the more energized one. We get quite excited by it and we get carried away with it. But in so doing, we tune out the other one. And that's what creates the problem. It creates an imbalance. So if AI becomes something that gets us more caught up in the focus, more caught up in the screens, more caught up in fight flight, the addictiveness to a computer game or whatever it is, or internet shopping, then it's taking us away from our humanity. Yeah. Mm. So it's clearly not helping. However, if it becomes a tool that is in service of that balancing, then it's just another tool, like language, like a pen, like a screwdriver. Let's not get too caught up in it. So I think that's the issue. We're not going back to who we are, because much of us have forgotten who we are. But let's bring it back to that. Then we can use these tools. But first, we need to be aligned. And as Lao Tzu said, know the male, yet keep to the female. Or as Isaiah says, hear and your soul shall sing. You need to open and listen first. That's that feminine, that's that responsive capacity. So you need to be more in the right brain hemisphere. You need to be more in the heart, more in the embodied before being in the mechanistic. So have that capacity to connect with life and then use AI as a tool. Use AI without that capacity to attend to life and you're going to get lost.
Yeah, I love how you just walked us into that, especially from the perspective of like how the human body on the inside actually operates, right? Because as we understand ourselves, we can understand, let's say, the tools of social media that are out there right now that clearly induce dopamine addiction and create this kind of loop of keeping us basically slave or victim to a consumption cycle. Like if we keep going that way, sure, it's going to be very easy to foresee how it's going to deteriorate us. But on the other hand, there are such simple applications to a tool as we understand ourselves in the interplay with it. And I think it's extremely important to have these dialogues and to also not just point at it, but, maybe at some point, I'm curious if you have experience with that, but also connect with the creators of those tools, because it's very different if we intend to create a tool to just harvest attention off a social media platform for people to click like and share, or if we create a tool to simply support and help us with our needs and our maybe even our economic needs as humans.
We're going for a massive wake up, and I think COVID was a very interesting part of that. So what you're seeing on the one hand is a tendency for more control and power, And that, again, resonates with one part of that snake, that dorsal, that left brain hemisphere that wants to control, that wants to know. You know, that part is getting more and more dominant and has been over the last 100 years or more. And we noticed this through COVID. On the one hand, you know, we had people, great resignation, questioning what are they doing, opening up more to life, spending more time with their kids and family, which is that other part of the spiral. And then on the other hand, we had a dismantling of civil liberties, a track and trace, manage, monitor, control system coming in to try and, you know, in inverted commas, to help protect us, but actually a control manage tendency. And you find this in the climate change movement, for instance. You find this in medicine. You find this in any part of life. You find this in education, where on the one hand, there's this kind of let's explore and allow us to be more in our sovereignty with freedom, truth, and love, essentially. And then there's this other tendency, which is where we need to manage and control people, or we need to form a control mechanism, because otherwise people won't be trusted. Now, I'm not saying one is right or one is wrong, but there's very easy to get caught on that left-brained hemisphere power control tendency, because it has a grasping, narrowing focus. And when we're ungrounded from nature, which most of us are, ungrounded from real life, from the source, then we easily get pulled into that overly controlling power, self-separate tendency. And that's become very dominant. And so you have billions, if not trillions, pumping into stuff that is there to help basically enslave, so that we become consumers. There are, I think, thousands of satellites being pumped up into the atmosphere at the moment as part of a smart planet. No one's questioning how they're affecting the ozone or greenhouse gases, because it's part of a new techno system that might help control carbon reduction or something like that. So that's what happens. We get ungrounded. And until we recognize that that ungrounding is happening in each of us, it becomes easy to blame Elon Musk or Microsoft or whatever. But actually, it's a capacity within each of us to be able to right ourselves and connect into life.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly the same place where this awareness that life is perceiving itself through us as agents of life then can switch us on to become, you know, I would say activists for the cause we believe in. And I don't really mean activists in the sense of, you know, activism, maybe the way we've seen it in television the last 20, 30 years of like people tying themselves to trees or roads. I think becoming activated for, you know, as becoming activated as an agent of regeneration is really what is happening to so many people. Because yeah, you're right. Like we've barely questioned at a large all of the technological quotation marks progress of the last 20, 30 years. We've just accepted it in with an open door, no second thought. And I think this is really changing because of the, you know, impact social media already had on us. We're realizing these tools are, you know, just like you said, like a knife. It can be used to cut bread, or it can be used to severely hurt someone. And so I think it's the time where, you know, more and more people are paying attention. What's your, what would be your call to action to, you know, people that feel like they don't have power, but really actually we all have power? Like what's a way to meaningfully activate to become an agent of life at this time?
Find your power. So you've got to start with yourself. And the beautiful thing about life is that we need do nothing more nor nothing less than truly relax. And that is just, because we're so tired, there's so much to do, so much to read and get busy with and fight against. But actually to relax, and I don't mean slump out in front of Netflix, I mean to allow your body mind to be attuned back to that left and right brain hemisphere, head and heart. When we allow ourselves through flow, through any form of practice, yoga, qigong, deep breathing, when you allow yourself to be in flow, you can tap into the power. I say, you know, we could say it's your power, but actually it's life. And then that can feed you and you can work with that. That has to be the beginning. Gaining your own sovereignty, and that comes through self-awareness, and then it leads into systemic awareness, working out how systems actually flow.
Yeah, so well put. I'm gonna keep moving through a few questions here because I'm really curious, Giles, what other gold nuggets we can pull out of you here today. I'm gonna change the topic a little bit. It's still really connected, but you know, I'm gonna throw this at you. What do you think of the big picture, the idea of trash in our world?
Well, again, it's a byproduct of an imbalance. And so, you know, it's sort of throwaway society or recognition. We've lost touch with the circularity of how life is, and we've tried to turn everything into linear tubes. And so therefore we're consuming the hell out of stuff, and things are just being dumped out the other end. So it's a byproduct of a disconnection or us being asleep. The good news is that trash might just wake us up, because we might start walking on the beach and realizing, hang on a minute, this is wrong. There's something deeply upsetting here. So that might wake us up. But yeah, we are walking asleep, and trash is part of that.
We're walking asleep until we wake up and start to see. Yeah. I think trash is such an interesting one, because when you start seeing, you become aware that there is no such thing as trash, because it is already within a circularity, right? We're in a closed planetary loop that, like, we can't send the trash away. Maybe we could put it into space, but then it's going to float out there, right? So it creates this very visible, as you said, connection to waking up, to starting to see. Is because if you walk on the beach and you realize the trash is simply dumped all over the place, it might very well awaken that part of us that is connected to the larger whole. And I think there's quite a few topics like that. You know, social media might be one of them too, where at some point the frustration over how these tools have taken over our life can flip and turn into an activation. So it's truly interesting times we live in from the perspective of how many individuals are picking up that call of realizing there's way more to life than following the square box that I was taught.
It's a fascinating time actually to be alive. It's very challenging on the one hand, because all of our sort of patterns of behavior are being disrupted. And yet it's fascinating, because for any real change to happen, we need to start off with dissonance. It's dissonance that just starts to disrupt us. It's almost like the old expression, adversity reveals genius, prosperity conceals it. It's funny, because of course the very thing we're trying to find in life is prosperity, which is actually concealing our genius, whereas adversity, the thing that we don't really like, is the thing that's revealing us. So that's what's going on. You know, we are struggling with this dissonance, this pulling apart, and it's really uncomfortable, and sometimes we just want to run and hide away, but actually we're starting to shift. And this is a profound moment. You know, it's a flickering phase change that we're going through. It's a waking up. And I think it was Claire Graves, the adult developmental psychologist, who said that it's not merely a transition to a new level of human existence. It's actually what he called a new movement in the symphony of human identity. And so it's a question of us bringing forth more of who we truly are. Jesus, I think, was the one who was supposedly said, if you bring forth what is within you, what is within you will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you will destroy you. And what we're doing is we're destroying ourselves, because we're sleeping. We're not digesting. We're not actually waking. We're not processing. And so this dissonance is cajoling us, and we're starting to allow ourselves to move through a process which is going to allow us to bring forth what is truly within us, which is this deep sense of connectedness with life. And so every time we shift in our phase change, we also shift to a new stage of meaning making, a new way of organizing. And what regenerative leadership is essentially is a new way of running our organizations, our businesses, and our ventures.
Yeah, very much so. You think that part that is deeply within us is just you know, essentially optimistic, or do you think optimism is something we're also choosing along that journey? Like, how do you connect to optimism, even though you're saying it, like, this world at this point in time is full of adversity, right? And many people feel like they give up because it's like, it's too much to bear, it's too much to carry. How does that process look for you?
I suppose it really depends what you truly mean by optimism. I think Einstein says something very clever about it somewhere along the line, which is, I mean, am I a realist in the fact that there's no other way other than to work with what you've got? So is that being just practical? To be downbeat about it and give up is failure. So we've got to work with what we got. And when we look at nature, what we see is that actually the, back to your idea of the trash or the stuff, is actually manure. It's, you know, the rubbish that we have, whether we've held, you know, negative feelings in our spleen and gut, when we let go of them, they are part of a letting go, digesting process. And it's the same as what mycelium do in the soil. They're constantly converting toxins into stuff that can then be part of life. So that regenerating process, and you might argue that the whole aspect of regeneration is that death, rebirth, is that processing, breaking down the old, bringing through the new. So that bringing forth, which is essentially what education used to be about, educea, is a bringing forth process. So our systems back in ancient Greek times were there to purely help us with this process of regenerating. Now they are purely here to try and make us into utilities, part of, you know, the tool mindset, you know, and in so doing actually enslaving ourselves, even though they're proposed to give us freedom.
Yeah, this is one of those deep parts of our conversation. I am absolutely with you there. It, you know, industrial education system is basically creating industrial slaves. And then at the same time, you know, I personally was an exchange student when I was 15, 16 in Paraguay, in a third world country, for a full year. And I remember coming out of that school year, you know, with all respect, I learned very little in that school year. I learned a lot from the people over the year and the languages and the social dynamics. But I realized coming back to Germany, where I grew up, that even though this school system seems to be a joke, that I'm so grateful that I at least have, you know, that basic line of education that taught me English, that taught me how to learn, right? But it never made me, let's say, an avid fan of the education system. So my question for you is, if you were to single-handedly or with your team of chosen experts revolutionize the education system at large, what would you do?
Well, I've actually spent time here, had people come in the woods, head teachers and so forth, who have been trying to pioneer transforming the education system. Again, what you're doing is you're buffering up against an old mindset. So the concepts that we need for working out how to work with life and become regenerative are there. So that's not the problem. The thinking, it's not, we've got the tool sets, we've got the knowing, we've got all that we need. What's the issue is allowing the old system to die and the new system to give birth. So it's back to this metamorphic death rebirth process. So how does one work with existing school structures? So for instance, I had a head teacher here who was doing some brilliant work and bringing in the sacred geometric patterns of harmony that you find within nature and helping inform school children about it and how it helped them with learning, how it helped them with metalwork, how it helped them with mathematics, with finding their life purpose, all sorts of things. And he was ousted by the network because it was seen as, you know, not in line with the sort of dogma of the day. And so it's the same with what I find with leaders. It's the same challenge. You know, I could work with a couple of leaders in an organization, and then maybe a new chief finance officer comes in and then starts questioning, well, what is all this stuff? Or a new chairman comes in, or a new CFO comes, and then they, you know, because they're so caught up in the old system, they're going to question all this, because it takes time to really embody it and feel it. And so the challenges that have been going on and the seeds that have been sown over the last few decades, and back to our point of how it's been accelerating over the last few years, mean that there's now slightly more people aware. So maybe a CFO comes into the organization and he's already a bit aware. He's already kind of, well, I get B Corps, I get business as a force for good, I get the point of purpose. And so you're working with a bit more of the bridge and you've got a little bit less that you need to redesign and work with. So, you know, it's the same in education. You've got more teachers. Our kids go to a normal mainstream primary school, and yet what they're bringing home as homework, I think, oh, that's really interesting that they're learning about X, Y, Z. It's not just totally mainstream. And so I think all the time you're working with these little cracks of light, more energy coming through, and that has a cumulative effect, an exponential effect. And that's what we're seeing. Very far from perfect, but sometimes the blackest hour is what invites in the dawn. And I think that's what we're seeing now, is starting to see more and more people aware of a need to change. And companies, in my line of work, businesses, doing very well whilst also doing good.
Yeah, it's exciting to feel your energy, your optimism and your perspective on all of this, Giles, because, you know, it is the darkest hour when dawn starts to appear, right? And so we do learn, and our, you said it earlier, our genius comes through adversity, right? We do learn when we need to innovate. And so that's certainly the time we live in. And, you know, just in the last decade of me being really dedicated to this topic and consciousness expanding through me and the work I do in the world, I've realized these themes, these topics, regeneration being kind of the full of it, but all of the things that are connected to it, there have become increasingly more mainstream. And I would agree that on a maybe more esoteric or energetic level, like the time seems to be accelerating. The time on planet Earth is changing, right? We can even, if someone is deeply into the where science and the esoteric meets, we could measure that through something like Schumann resonance, right? That the heartbeat of the planet is changing. And so that means the energetic current that we're existing in is changing, which allows us to, I would say, just, you know, get more energy from the earth or from source to represent that in our living human form, rather than being stuck up here in the intellectual kind of prefrontal cortex ability of thinking. And it seems to me almost that thinking alone is kind of done with. You know, if you're not connected to the ground and you're not feeling at the same time too, as you said at the very beginning, like open mind, heart, and will, then, you know, the outcome will simply be linear. It will simply be focused on maybe increasing finance and revenue, and therefore it might also lead to destruction. Do you feel that regeneration is at this place where we are connecting to being able to speak the language of finance, speak the language of money? Because we know in this world it is very important to also connect to the economic kind of structures that have been here. Do you think it is that time now, or is it still like...
It's very interesting what's happening. There's all sorts happening in the finance market at the moment, and I coach a number of leading people in that place. I just released a podcast actually from an executive director of someone who works with a lot of the financial institutions, and there's a big shift going into what is called nature-based economics. And on the one hand, if back to our little twisting again, if it's purely mechanistic, then what's happening? We're actually just quantizing the last frontier of life. We're turning nature into another set of commodities to maximize profit from. So that's that sort of, if you just take it as a left hemispheric attention. However, if it's more grounded and it's more attuned and it serves life, then what we're doing is actually starting to understand and bring in an understanding of how ecosystems work and the importance of grass, coral grasses around Bahamas, the importance of whales and things like this. So it's bringing our left brain hemisphere into more of how nature works. And then money systems are starting to follow into that. And so it's quite interesting. We're shifting from just a pure focus on carbon, which was quite limited, quite frankly, and quite mechanistic, to actually now widening into biodiversity. And so as long as, it's back to the same theme, really, that we've been working with, as long as that is continuously balanced, if we just get caught up on nature-based economics and it just becomes another tool without the server, you know, it serves itself, then it becomes mechanistic and it can get caught up with AI and, derivatives and futures and so forth. But if it becomes actually grounded in serving life, in us recognizing, wow, everything is interconnecting and therefore it's important, then what it's doing is actually giving a value to life, which I think is part of this little journey we're on. Because as human beings, what happens is we're open, we draw out something from it, and then we go back in. It's what the ancients used to say, the one, then comes the two, and then out of that sacred marriage comes the three. And the same happens in our way of understanding reality. We start with that right-brained hemisphere embodied experience. Then the left-brained hemisphere draws out, separates, a little understanding of it. And then we put that understanding back into its lived in context. The challenge comes where we draw out, we separate, and then we get caught on the sense of separation. And that's what we're doing. Our egos are so strong, our sense of separateness is so strong that we draw out, say, nature-based economics, for instance, and then we get caught in it. So we start getting self-flagellated around our sense of separateness or whatever the tool is, AI, and then it becomes its own little self-entity bubble, disconnected from source. So as long as we remember to connect it back in again, so it's an opening, drawing out and connecting back in. That little rhythm is happening all the time. The one, the two, the three, the many. It's happening in yin yang. It's happening in our bodies. And so being aware of that tendency and noticing it inside ourselves each day and keeping ourselves connected is key. And therefore, tools, practices that we could learn at school or we could learn at higher education or in the organization, and this is the organizations I work with now bring these practices into their present day cultures, of continuously balancing the yin and the yang. And on the one hand, that makes us more creative and more able to think of innovation. On the other hand, it just makes us more human and more able to tune in and listen.
I like what you just landed on, you know, that which makes us more human. I think especially, you know, it's 2023 as we're recording this, as the dawn of AI is happening in the way that, you know, we're kind of also looking forward to it in a certain way. The benevolent AI that will be part of a healthy planet, I think will very much help us to deepen that question and that pursuit of, like, who are we as humans in the first place? Who am I as a human? What is my role as a human, right? And so it will hopefully serve us as a tool that makes us go deeper in this pursuit of being the creative agents of life that human beings are here to be.
Yeah. As long as we recognize that we don't need the tool to help us reconnect, that's all. Otherwise, before we know it, that tool then becomes actually it's starting to control. So as long as we start with that openness and therefore surrendering, you find this in all of the ancient wisdom traditions, it's there in all the mythologies, that capacity to connect to stillness that is here within the moment, to center point, if you like, remembering that connectedness and then surrendering into life. Then from that place of openness, we can then use the tool. And I think often we forget that, and people coming into life now with all of the digital handhelds get so distracted that it becomes difficult for them to actually remember that stillness and that capacity to unknow, to not know. And from the not knowing comes the knowing.
Yeah, brilliantly said. I would even include all of the practices and traditions that one can practice. They too need to kind of like burn away like a layer to then come back to that authentic connection to stillness. Because I can get so wrapped up in how my breath work, my qigong or my yoga practice is so special that's the one practice to, you know, yield them all. And so even though I love all of my practices, I find it quite interesting to observe, even just in myself, how the human mind, personality complex, the ego then grabs a hold of it again. Once again, it's like, no, wait, but this is the access point that really works, you know? And so it's fundamentally just really the stillness and the maybe even the solitude within the natural world. I find that happens to me when I go surfing, which I don't do all the time, but when I go, there's something very humbling in this process of really understanding I'm just the small little unit in the totality of life, you know, being beat up by the wave, maybe not even surfing at all, just being out there to swim for the hour or two. And then when you're back, you're in this stoked place, right? Your heart is beating, adrenaline is pumping. There's something in that zone. And I think that's kind of what you said. When we open to life and we connect with life on each day, then the work we create, the love we pour into the world, really changes the world how we know it.
Yeah. And when you're surfing, one is relaxed. Okay, one's there, one's in it. Well, it's an active relaxation. But if you're tight, that's when you make mistakes. And what I loved about what you just shared then is this playfulness of even noticing our own selves, noticing this diddly desire to constantly struggle with life. That in itself is playful. You know, we are these special beings. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, engaging in life. I think enthusiasm, the infusing, the energy that comes through us, whether it be enthused to go and surf or whether it be enthused to actually notice how I get caught up on my breath work or my yoga, you know, that level of noticing and playing with it is beautiful. I mean, this experience of life is awesome. And reminding ourselves of that helps, especially when it's so easy to get caught up in augmented reality or constantly zoning into the next 5G, you know, with our Wi-Fi, so we're getting all the notifications. So just reminding ourselves of that experience, this temporal experience of time, is also an eternal experience, that actually the eternal is found in the temporal. You know, this beautiful experience you said of time slowing down, but also speeding up, and us becoming more aware of how space-time feels, the very fabric, the very rapture of reality, is this surfing experience of life, you know.
Giles, this has been such an exciting conversation and so many, you know, golden nuggets of wisdom being shared. I do have a last topic I want to kind of, you know, ask you before we wrap, simply because I have you on the line here and I think it's an important one, and it's about money and monetary systems and maybe even the future of money or regenerative money or, you know, blockchain technology and banking systems collapsing, like all of the buzzwords thrown at you. What do you think, where are we at in that process, and what is maybe very important for people to pay attention to about the way, you know, that whole topic of how we exchange and trade and make sense of exchange and trade will evolve over the next years?
Yeah, I think it will. I think it's a very interesting area. I was involved with blockchain a long time ago. I'm not now, but I did a project that looked at and I got involved in Islamic financing, and there was quite a lot in there at the time, seen as perhaps trying to move away from essentially a very, you know, a US dollar dominated market. Now, what a lot of this is about is, again, back to power control. And if we're shifting out of power control into sense respond, participating with life, a more co-creative venture of life, where we're exchanging, and it's not just, I wouldn't even say it's an exchange, because that indicates a sort of transaction. It's more than exchange. It's a kind of, it's a reciprocation, you know, continuously playing with, a commingling, if you like. So that's what's shifting, is a recognition that we can create services in a way that actually serve, that aren't just exploiting and generating a profit. They're actually creating some value. You know, that's what business used to do, and a lot of businesses still do. So then we less interested in finance for the purposes of finance, and more interested in finance serving, acting as a liquidity system that enables us to serve. And so blockchain is great. It's another tool again, if it enables and helps that interconnecting co-creativity. If it's another form of power control, then, or it's another form of separating into financial derivatives, then again, it's that tendency of the left again going a bit off. And so we just got to keep that balance. But money is essentially energy. And at the moment, that is being trying to be controlled, because that's a very good way to control us. I noticed it when I came here to this beautiful land. I needed to have get a loan, a debt, a commercial mortgage to make it work. And then suddenly I'm kind of feeling a bit like, whoa, God, I have to you know, service this debt every month. And it changes one's behavior quite easily. So, your trust in life actually becomes more about, oh gosh, scarcity rather than abundance, you know.
Yeah, I love how we've gone into a few topics in this conversation and kind of shown both sides of it, the linear, narrow part of it, which often tends to enslave us through this very left brain kind of focus on just like the mechanistic reality, which, you know, is still really easy to observe, even though the reality truly is a complex quantum field, right? And so once we tap into those deeper layers, then I think it's ours as humans to, with each other, determine how we want to structure life, society, reality, finance, garbage, all of that, and have it be part of the larger cycle of life. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. I do want to make sure that before we wrap, we mentioned one more time your latest book, Leading by Nature, also your podcast. Where can people find more and buy the book?
GilesHutchins.com is probably the easiest way. I also have a blog, thenatureofbusiness.org, where I often write pieces around regenerative leadership. It's been a real pleasure to be with you, Julian. We're the ones we've been waiting for.
Aho, may it be so.